Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Chrisanne Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com, where we are liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. Welcome to the Chrisanne Hall Show. Let's get started. Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chrisanne Hall Show. Chrisanne Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com, where we are liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. I am so happy to welcome you to episode 1450. I know it's 1450 because that's what Christian told me it was. We're starting a little late today, and I want to thank you for your patience. And I also want to ask you to join us after the show on Quite Frankly. Yes, once a month, I get to be a contributor to Frank's show, Quite Frankly. You can find him on DLive. That's usually where I find him. He also, I don't think he actually broadcasts on YouTube anymore, as neither do I. Hey, Christian, why don't you tell everybody hello?
Hello, everybody.
I love having Christian here with me. He makes me feel like I'm not sitting here talking to no one. I know you guys are out there, and I'm happy to be live today. Hey, Christian, we're live today, aren't we? We haven't been live in a long time. I just got back from Oregon. We had a fabulous, fabulous weekend in Oregon. 2 days of constitutional training. And then JC, he conducted the church service on Sunday morning. And then guess what, Christian? Sunday night, I went to my first ever country music concert. Have you ever been to a country music concert?
I have. I've been to a few.
You've been to a country music concert?
Yeah.
Which ones?
What's his name? I think it was Johnny something. hold on.
Well, this was Aaron Lewis. And what's interesting was, is they always told me I were going to this country music concert. And I'm not a really huge country music fan. My country music that I like is the stuff that sounds more like other genres of music, like country rock, country rap, that sort of thing. I love Colt Ford. And so I didn't know quite what to expect. Did you figure out who it was?
It was Johnny Lang, I'm pretty sure.
Johnny Lang? I have no idea who that is. None whatsoever. But here's the interesting thing. Aaron Lewis put on a great concert. It was a lot of fun. I want to thank the People's Rights Oregon 5 for the invitation to this concert. It was such a pleasure. But I don't know if you know Aaron Lewis. Aaron Lewis actually started off in a rock band called The Stand. And he sang the song that became sort of top 40 popular. It's been a while, I think, is what the name of the song was. And I was like, ah, that's that dude. I didn't know it. But anyway, my first ever country western concert. And Aaron Lewis is not your typical over-exaggerated country twang, southern twang country theme. It was really, really great. And he may be one of my new favorites, right up there with Colt Ford. Because those are the ones that I usually generally only listen to. But thank you for joining me on today's show. Today's show, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court, the threats of violence against the Supreme Court, and the case that's coming up, the New York State case on the right of the people to conceal carry away from their home. As if we would need permission from, you know, the Supreme Court or from New York to conceal carry in your home. New York's law says that you have to give them a good enough excuse as to why you need to leave your home with a gun. Yeah. Have you seen New York lately? I think that's pretty much, you know what, here's what you do. You send in a thumb drive with video clips from the nightly news. That would be my reason why I need to leave my home with a gun in New York. But there's some interesting correlations that are happening here between these two issues, and I wanted to take just a few minutes today to discuss them with you. Thank you again for joining me. Hey, if you are watching now, do me a favor right now. Ready? Like and share. Like and share, and don't forget, as we're doing the show today, go ahead and leave your comments below. Talk about the things that you like to hear. Mention the things that you're learning, because remember, we are a teach show, not a talk show. And when you mention the things that you like and you mention the things that you learn, when this comes across people's feed and they see that, then they're like, hey, I need to know that. Hey, I like to hear that. And then you help us beat the algorithms. We are still on Facebook. We are on DLive. We are on Twitch. We are also on Spotify, iTunes, Google Music, Anchor FM, and a whole bunch of other places that I'm not even quite sure. To my knowledge, we are not on YouTube, but hey, I am not opposed to you taking what we broadcast and putting it on YouTube yourself. I am totally very cool with that. So the first thing that I want to talk to you about is this threat of violence against the Supreme Court for this upcoming review, just put it this way, review of Roe v. Wade. And if you remember, I covered this a little bit in episode 1449, and Christian has started making what we call liberty clips, and I want to show you the first liberty clip that Christian has made, because it'll remind you of what we talked about in 1449. Christian, go ahead and play that clip from 1449 for me. Inciting a riot is not what happened through the lips of Donald Trump. As a matter of fact, inciting a riot did not happen from the lips of anyone that went on that stage. And you have to ask yourself, why is that being presented that way when factually, legally, and evidentially, it did not happen? Okay, but that's the narrative that the media is propagating through America. But yet, here we have the media promulgating lies about this Supreme Court opinion that is coming out about abortion and the effects of this opinion on abortion. They are actually spreading disinformation. Make sure you keep in mind the disinformation word there as I use it, because I do it by quite accurately. But it is the media, the politicians, and the pundits who are spreading disinformation about what this Supreme Court opinion actually does to abortion in America. As a matter of fact, can I just be bold with you? It's lies. It's absolute lies. It's not even disinformation. It's just flat out lies. And they know it. Okay. And they're not that stupid. I would imagine there are a few in the ranks that are just, you know, brainless automatons and don't actually think for themselves. But look, guys, what we've got here is a situation where there are many of those in power who actually know they are lying, everybody. And yet, I guarantee you, they're not on the potential domestic terrorist list, because all of these threats coming against our Supreme Court justices are based on lies promulgated by these people. If the media, the politicians, and the pundits actually just spoke the truth about this Supreme Court opinion, there wouldn't be this hysteria. But then, you know, the people who are sending out the lies, actually, chaos is their currency. They profit from this propaganda, which should make them even more guilty of slander, of libel, of committing crimes, of inciting this violence. So that's just a reminder of what we covered on episode 1449. We've also got some other clips from that as well. But go back and look at that, because I'm going to be referring to that episode again in just a few minutes. But Christian, I want you to go ahead and pull up that article that we have from the Epoch Times. I'm going to put my glasses on for you. Or for me, rather. You don't need my glasses. I need my glasses. So, Supreme Court protest organizers won't rule out violence. Now, what's really interesting, and I want you to follow along, because I'm going to read with you, or to you, if you're listening to this, a really good portion of this article, because I want to point out to you how the media, and I realize this is the Epoch Times, but you have to understand, we've created a culture that is irresponsible with their use of terms and terminology. And inadvertently, that spreads over into even our conservative writings. So this headline, the Supreme Court protest organizers won't rule out violence. And I want to point out to you here, and I'm like circling right here. I don't know if you can, oh, Christian, put that up there. I'm circling this headline because I want you to see protests and violence. Okay, there is no such thing as a violent protester. But we have got a culture now that conflates those terms and puts them together. And it's not just it's simply irresponsible, ladies and gentlemen. It's very, very dangerous. It implies that violence is somehow equated to the First Amendment's recognition of the right to protest. Only the First Amendment says the right to peaceably assemble and the right to petition for our government for a redress of grievances, right? Peaceably. So if you are not peaceably, you are absolutely not a protester. You are a criminal. So watch this. It says, as officials in Washington brace for possible violence following a Supreme Court decision about access to abortion, organizers of a group planning protests at the high court told followers not to oppose the use of violence. Now, how ironic is this? I just want to mention to you the irony of this. I don't know if I should just read a little bit more before I go. Let me just go ahead and read a little bit more, okay? Leaders of the group, quote, Shut Down DC, stated at an organizing meeting at Petworth United Methodist Church in Washington. Did you get that, Christian? These people at Petworth United Methodist Christian Church, these people who call themselves Christians, are going to protest the Supreme Court returning to the states the issue of abortion. These Methodists are arguing that we should be murdering babies and that violence is okay against the Supreme Court. I'm just curious here. So, organizing meeting at Petworth United Methodist Church in Washington on June 12th, stated that violence runs counterproductive, but isn't necessarily bad. Violence, when you are not acting in self-preservation, is always bad. Always bad. And this is not a situation of self-preservation. So it is bad. Okay. Remember, liberty knows no bounds other than you cannot harm another. If you are committing a violent act and it's not in preservation of your life or the life of someone else, did you catch that? In preservation of life, then you do not have the liberty to commit violence. You are a criminal. Preservation of life, ladies and gentlemen, not the preservation of the ability to decide to end life, okay? So, shutdown DC plans to blockade the U.S. Supreme Court building on June 13th so the justices cannot enter. Yeah. They don't go in the front door, guys. This is really dumb. Okay. Supreme Court justices don't park their cars on the street corner, put coins in the machine, and walk in the front door. You are not going to get to the place where the Supreme Court justices enter into the Supreme Court building. I don't want to, like, dash anybody's, you know, hopes on this, but whatever. Maybe this is just more propaganda to get fear and all this other stuff. The activist group is protesting in response to a leaked high court draft opinion that suggests the court plans to overturn Roe v. Wade. Now, remember, in episode 1449, I explained to you, this does not overturn Roe v. Wade, okay? This does not make abortion illegal. What it rightly does is says that abortion is not a federal issue and that it needs to be handled at the state level, okay? Handled at the state level. If you want the details, you got to go back and listen to the past shows. So, okay. So here is longtime, quote, activist Nadine Block. Now, I want you guys to check how they keep using these terms, activists, protests. And they don't use the word criminal, because that's who these people really are criminals, okay? We are not in the business, she says, of telling people what to do. We're in the business of pointing out the structural violence of the system. If people don't like other people's tactics, fix the system. We're not going to condemn those other violent tactics. Can you remember during the presidential debates how much time they spent trying to get Donald Trump to condemn the actions of other groups to which he was not a member, to which he was not even involved? And do you condemn this group? Do you condemn this group? And then he was totally and completely lambasted for saying that he condemned them, but didn't say it in the way, you know, in the exact words they wanted, right? Here we have someone who is referred to as an activist saying we do not condemn violence, all right? So I want you to know these people are not just simply not condemning. They are aiding and abetting it. These people, according to this Epoch Times, no. According to their own words, are inciting violence. Check this out. Let's see. If you want to do property destruction, do it in secret. This is Nadine Block. Are you kidding me? We're having trials about January 6th and Donald Trump inciting a riot. And here we have in an article, Nadine Block saying, if you want to do property destruction, do it in secret. There's no condemnation of bringing the system down. You know, there's a whole psychological phenomenon called transference. It's a way that someone deflects from their own guilt, from their own actions, by transferring accusations, guilt on other people. The media is guilty of transference. The leftist movement is guilty of transference. They're transferring what they actually, the violence they commit, what they actually do in accusations against people who are not even violent, who don't even advocate, who don't even come close to saying things like this. Another, look at this, activist, right? Not criminal, activist, who identified herself as Sadie, said that protest, quote, action groups can split into red teams and green teams. If violence starts, the red teams could start violence while the green team could provide cover and be, quote, eyes and ears on the red team. They're planning it. They're telling you their plan. They're telling you how to commit violence. This is direct inciting violence. I mean, seriously, I don't even get how this goes beyond our realm. I mean, have we become so, don't know, debauched in our thinking that this stuff doesn't even rise to the level anymore of what it really, really is? I mean, I didn't do it. I was doing the show prep, and I was getting ready to give Christian a whole list of articles that have been published about me by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And each of those articles claim that I'm an anti-government extremist hate group. Me. They say, and these are their words, not mine, that the way I teach the Constitution could possibly at some point encourage or, make someone decide to commit violence. I don't remember the exact words, but it was more like, they're going to decide to do this based on what I might be teaching. Teaching the Constitution as it was written and intended to be applied, teaching limited government and greater personal responsibility and greater liberty makes me an anti-government extremist hate group. And yet, these people are activists. I'm reading it to you from Epoch Times. Epoch Times calling them activists, guys. This is a cultural disease now. A cultural disease. So, one of the activists again, right? I'm the violent extremist for teaching the Constitution. I am the anti-government violent extremist, they say, for teaching the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. And these people are activists who are going to divide themselves into red teams and blue teams to conduct their violence and to thwart any arrests or obstruction to their violence. Okay. One of the activists who called himself Rusty said that he has stolen banners from politicians and the group will repaint them to use in the protest. This activist, Epoch Times, calls him stole things. No. Stealing does not make you an activist. It makes you a thief. It makes you a criminal. If anybody needs a banner, he says, like a nice heavy-duty banner, I've been stealing politicians' banners from all over town. I mean, I don't even know. I don't even know. Where do you go with this? The FBI says we will not tolerate violence, destruction, interference with government functions, or trespassing on government property. And yet, the media is all over calling these people activists, calling these people, protesters. And I teach the Constitution, and I'm a violent extremist. How do you even reconcile that in a normal and sane world? Well, maybe you don't, because we don't live in a normal, insane world. And I'll remind you, episode 1449, I go over the National Terrorism Advisory System bulletin that was released on June 7th, 2022, that declares that airing your grievances. Okay, airing your grievances. I'm reading it right here on the report. If you go back and watch 1449, I will go through and read this report with you, show you what's in it. Airing your grievances is now domestic terrorism. But apparently, it is only domestic terrorism if your grievances are anti-leftist doctrine. If you are anti-communist, if you are anti-big government, if you are anti-unconstitutional government, if you want government to be limited and defined by the Constitution, if you want it to be small and not even in your life the way it's supposed to be, then you air those grievances, you're a domestic terrorist. But if you threaten violence against the Supreme Court, give articles, give interviews about how you're actually going to do it, then you're not a domestic terrorist anymore. You're just an activist. Just an activist. Well, interestingly enough, quite coincidentally, mind you, the Supreme Court is going to be issuing an opinion in the next days or weeks in a pending dispute over New York's laws on the concealed carry of handguns. I just want you to understand this. You've got Brett Kavanaugh being threatened at his own home, needing armed guards to escort him from his home. You have violent terrorists promising violence against the Supreme Court. And now the Supreme Court is going to be deciding on whether we have a right to conceal and carry away from our home for our protection. I'm thinking they might be a little motivated to find in favor of a right to keep and bear arms. It might just be strangely relevant to them why we need to keep and bear arms. You know, coincidentally, strangely relevant. Now, just to give you a little background, the New York law, as I mentioned as the show started, the New York law says you have, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, you have to show New York a good enough reason as to why you need to carry your gun out of your house, right? Because remember, they're relying on D.C. Heller that, you know, the right to keep and bear arms is a defense of your home, of your person, and they're taking that to the extreme. Okay, if it's a defense of your home and your person, then it's a defense of your person and your home, and you don't need to take your gun anywhere. Unless maybe you need to take it to get repaired, or you're going to go to the range, and then sometimes that's not even good enough, you know, to go to the range kind of thing. So, according to The Hill, experts said that while it's unclear how broadly the Supreme Court would rule, now you guys know that's not me saying ruling, so whatever. It's unclear just how broadly the Supreme Court would rule. The restrictive New York law is likely to be invalidated in a decision that could have ramifications for gun control efforts across the country. Now, in this article by The Hill, they try to link the Supreme Court's opinion or the timing of their opinion to, you know, the school shootings and the shootings that have recently happened, right? In May 14th, an 18-year-old gunman armed with an AR-15 style assault rifle entered a Buffalo supermarket. An 18-year-old gunman with an AR-15 style assault rifle went to Uvalde, Texas. And so they're trying to say that, you know, this could have a really big influence, and this could be what causes the Supreme Court to uphold the state law, to say that the state can restrict our ability to carry, okay? But I just want you to understand something here. From human nature, they're going to probably be feel this more relevant to themselves and the current violence that they're under and the violent threats that they're feeling. So as a Supreme Court, which has, you know, typically this particular court has deferred to states and state laws. If there were any other day, anything else going on, I would tell you, I'd be more likely to see this Supreme Court say, it's New York. The Constitution of the United States doesn't authorize the federal government to create regulations and restrictions on the right to keep and bear arms within the state. And so this is a matter of state constitution. This is a matter of state law. This is not a federal matter, which would be absolutely accurate. By the way, the proper opinion from the Supreme Court regarding this New York state law would be this. This law is a state law. The federal government has no authority to regulate firearms within the state. As that not being a federal issue, by the 10th Amendment, it is reserved to the states. The regulation of firearms is reserved to the states. The first place you have to go to understand how the state may be permitted to regulate how one carries a firearm would be to go to the state constitution, because this is not a federal issue. And since this is not a federal issue, we are not going to have an opinion on this case otherwise. That's how it should go. Okay? That's how it should go. This is a state issue. This is not a federal issue. We are going to uphold the New York law. Now, I realize that, you know, you guys, there'll be plenty of people out there who are listening to this show right now. They're like, Chrisanne's in favor of gun control. That is not what I said. I did not say I was in favor of gun control. So please don't put those words in my mouth. What I'm saying is, this is not a federal issue. This is a state issue. As a matter of fact, this is an issue that by Article 3 of the Constitution, the federal courts are completely excluded from this jurisdiction. It's not in their jurisdiction. It's not within their authority to decide. So they should be returning it back to New York and saying, okay, you've got to understand, what does the New York Constitution say about the right to keep and bear arms? What does the New York Constitution say about the government's authority to control firearms, purchase, conceal, carry, open carry, whatever? It's a state issue, guys. It's not a federal issue. And that's how the Supreme Court should hold. But we're dealing with a situation now where they themselves are personally threatened. So I just don't think that's not what you're going to see, because human nature is going to take over. And I believe that they're going to, we're going to, you know, hear from this, right? So they're going to probably, in one way or another, limit this, okay? So it's interesting, this Hill article says, the conservative majority court is expected. They're not a conservative majority court. Let's just leave that right there. All right, now I'm going to slide this paper over, because now we're going to talk about this issue. And I see many people talking about it in the chat room, okay? Because I did say it is a state issue, not a federal issue, okay? How we keep and bear arms is a state issue, not a federal issue. Now, how should you be handled in your state? Well, our state constitutions ought to be written in such a manner that the right to keep and bear arms is recognized as a natural right. It is a natural right. You have a natural right to keep and bear arms because you have a natural right to self-preservation. Samuel Adams said it in 1772. Among the natural rights of the people are first life, second liberty, third property, together, number four, with the right to protect and defend them in the best manner they can. He says these are derived from the first law of nature, the duty of self-preservation. So your right to keep and bear arms is a natural right derived from the first law of nature, your duty of self-preservation. Just, I have covered this ad nauseum. You can go on my website, chrisannhall.com, and read any number of articles where I have explained this, okay? And if you go to libertyfirstsociety.com, you can take any number of classes that I have. And I have a number of classes on the right to keep and bear arms, okay? So listen up. I am not here to tell you, nor am I saying in any way, that your right to self-defense, your right to keep and bear arms is not a natural right. It is not. I mean, it is. I'm not saying that. It absolutely is. We have to understand that. But the state constitutions, and many of them do, by consent within the Bill of Rights, recognize that government may be able to control how you carry, okay? That is it. If there's a restriction on firearms within the Bill of Rights, 9 times out of 10 within the state constitution, it is limited only to carry, not to purchase, not to own, but only how you carry. And I'm sure you can imagine how that came about. All right? So, your state constitution is the relevant document in the question of how government may be involved with your right to carry. Okay? I know it sounds contradictory because it is. But you need to understand why this is important in New York. It's very different. I'm going to try to finish this up pretty quickly. I don't want to belabor this point. Part of the problem is the New York Constitution in their Bill of Rights does not have a section on the right to keep and bear arms. I'll just repeat this to you today. Again, the state, New York State Constitution in the Bill of Rights does not enumerate the right to keep and bear arms as many other states do. The right to keep and bear arms, quite unfortunately, is enumerated in Article 2, Section 4 of the New York Civil Rights Law. Okay? I'm sort of distracted by a comment that I see here in one of the things, but Gene Blocker says, but the Constitution is federal. No. Your state constitution is not federal. There are two constitutions, guys. Everybody lives in consent of two constitutions. The U.S. Constitution, which enumerates and designs the authority of the federal government, and your state constitution, which enumerates and defines state authority. Okay? I don't want to, like, digress there, but anyway. Quite unfortunately, New York's right to keep and bear arms is codified by law, not by constitution. And I say unfortunately because codifying it by law actually dilutes your authority. It's crazy. It absolutely does. Because you see, if your right is established by law, not recognized as an inherent right via the Constitution and your Bill of Rights, but is established by law, then that law can be amended and alter your right, because somebody will say, well, you didn't have the right in the Constitution. It's not a natural right. The Constitution recognizes it as a natural right. You have a right according to Article 2, Section 4 of the New York Civil Rights. Just so you understand how this gets diluted, okay? The New York Civil Rights Law, Article 6A, establishes a right to change of sexuality as a civil right. And Article 10 of the Civil Rights Law explains the laws that are repealed. So what you have to understand is the Civil Rights Law, because it's legislatively created, can be argued, can be legislatively altered or legislatively removed. That is not how it works from a constitutional perspective, right? Now, the argument is because the New York Constitution is silent as to the right to keep and bear arms, it is open for legislative creation or depletion. That would be the argument from a constitutional law perspective. Because the New York Constitution does not specifically enumerate the right to keep and bear arms, it may be legislated to be so or legislatively taken away. Now, again, this is all based on the lack of understanding that your right to keep and bear arms is actually a natural right. Now, I want you to understand why, because you might be thinking right now, what the heck? The New York Constitution doesn't even recognize that you have a right to keep and bear arms? Well, isn't that a failing with the New York Constitution? I mean, the argument from the other side is, well, if it was such an important right, surely they would have put it in the Constitution. And since they didn't put it in the Constitution, then it can't be that important of a right. But you have to understand what's happening in this New York Constitution. Now, it is very probable, highly likely, and quite apparent that Alexander Hamilton had a lot to do with the drafting of the New York Constitution. He, along with John Jay, are two of the three Federalist writers for the U.S. Constitution. The New York Constitution of 1777 is the one that I'm referring to. And if you understand Alexander Hamilton's feelings about bills of rights, you will understand why the right to keep and bear arms is not in the New York Constitution, even though the drafters of the New York Constitution in 1777 believed that the right to keep and bear arms was a natural right. I know it sounds crazy, but it's absolutely true. Okay? It is absolutely true. Even though they did not put the right to keep and bear arms in the New York Constitution, the drafters of the New York Constitution absolutely believed that the right to keep and bear arms was an inherent right. Now, at libertyfirstsociety.com, Christian's going to put the little web address up there for you. We have a class called The Great Debate. And in that class called The Great Debate, we go into the discussion of whether or not to have a U.S. Bill of Rights or not, because there was actually a debate on whether to have a U.S. Bill of Rights. And relevant to that discussion is Alexander Hamilton. And Alexander Hamilton actually explains why you would not find the right to keep and bear arms in the New York Constitution, even though Alexander Hamilton believed that you had an inherent right to keep and bear arms. Now, this comes from Federalist 84, okay? Federalist 84 says that, he says, why, for instance, should it be said that the liberty of the press shall not be restrained when no power is given by which restrictions may be imposed? So, this is the crux of his thinking. You see, the Constitution of your state specifically enumerates delegated authority to your state government. And in Alexander Hamilton's line of thinking is this, just very simply, and it is a very simple way of looking at things. Very simply, Alexander Hamilton's line of thinking is this: we did not delegate any authority to the New York government to regulate your right to keep and bear arms. And since we didn't delegate that authority to the federal government or to the New York government to the right to keep and bear arms, then there is no authority for them to do it. And since there is no authority for them to do it as delegated, then it is a right that remains with the people. He says, why should it be said that the liberty of press shall not be restrained when no power is given by which restrictions may be imposed? And then he goes on to explain, if you write down this right to keep and bear arms, or as he's putting here in Federalist 84, this liberty of press, what you're actually doing is opening the door for them to regulate it. So the key here is to not put it in writing and to not delegate the authority, and then to realize power not delegated cannot be lawfully exercised. So let me just break it down to you very, very simply. This way. Okay. New York government was delegated A, B, C, D, E, F powers. Within A, B, C, D, E, F powers, there is no authority to regulate your guns. Since there is no authority in A, B, C, D, E, F to regulate your guns, they can't do it. It's completely unconstitutional. So that's where I believe the absence of the right to keep and bear arms in the Bill of Rights does not indicate that the drafters of the 1777 New York Constitution believed you didn't have a right to keep and bear arms. Quite the opposite. They believed that you had a right to keep and bear arms. Therefore, they did not authorize the New York government to regulate it. Therefore, it is an absolute right, limited only by your criminal activity. And so you find constitutions at the state level that don't do this. New York doesn't enumerate it. It's not that they don't, the drafters of the Constitution didn't believe you had the right. It's because they believe that the Constitution was clearly defining and limiting government power. And since they never delegated the power to have anything to do with firearms, then there's no authority for them to do it. It just simply doesn't exist. And power exercised without authority is null and void. And that's very clear. If you want to understand this a little bit better than what I can give you on a podcast, you need to go to libertyfirstsociety.com, where I lay it all out for you right there. Now, the last thing that I want to cover is a question that I keep seeing coming through the chat rooms is this. Aren't the states subject to the U.S. Constitution? Yes, the states are subject to the U.S. Constitution when federal authority is delegated. The states are not subject to the U.S. Bill of Rights. The U.S. Bill of Rights was a recognition of the rights of the people in the face of federal authority. If you want to really understand this, you need to go to libertyfirstsociety.com and you need to hear it from Richard Henry Lee, from Alexander Hamilton, from John Jay, from James Madison. You need to hear it from them, okay? Because I'm going to tell you, you're not going to believe me because I'm not them. But this incorporation doctrine garbage about the U.S. Bill of Rights limiting and constraining the states is just garbage. It's not even real. The states don't need the U.S. Bill of Rights to be limited in their authority. We all have state constitutions. And part of this incorporation doctrine, which is supposed to tie the states to the federal constitution, is post-Reformation. And it's a means by which to eliminate the sovereignty of the state and to pull everything in America under federal jurisdiction. And we don't want that. We need a separation of authority between the states and the federal government. Not everything is a federal issue, which is the whole Roe v. Wade thing that we see here. Not everything is a federal issue. So once again, the Supreme Court is being threatened, not by activists, but by criminals. So I don't care what article you read. These people who are threatening the Supreme Court are not activists. They are not protesters. They are criminals. They are planning violence. They are stealing. They are inciting. They are not protesters. They are not activists. They are criminals. At the same coincidental time, the Supreme Court's going to be issuing their opinion on concealed carry based on a New York law while they're under threat by extremist criminals. So you do the math. You figure out from a human nature aspect how this one's going to work out. I suspect they're going to lean a little bit away from their current trend of state-controlled authority and reassert or at least craft a very brilliantly designed Supreme Court opinion, narrowly tailored just enough to strike confusion and chaos all across America and keep themselves safe, pretty much, right? This is not a conservative court, guys. You have one guy. You have one guy that's a constitutionalist. And every one of the others have their own little agendas that make them swing one way or the other. That's how this court is. I don't want to dash anybody's opinions, but that's just how it works. Well, that's today's episode 1450. I hope that you have learned something today. Make sure you like and share. And if you've learned something today, go ahead and put it into the comments below. And again, if I've actually, and this would be a really good thing, if I've actually sparked new questions in your mind, don't let me be a drive-by teacher. I want to help disciple you in understanding what our constitutions really mean, not based on what Chris Ann Hall says, not based on what the leftists and the profs and the professors say, but based on what those who actually drafted the Constitution say. And I can help you with that at libertyfirstsociety.com. Don't forget to go to noncompliantmovie.com and see the difference in the separation of power between the state and the federal government. And don't forget to find me next on Quite Frankly. God bless you guys. I will see you next time.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights.
We have a power!
And we've raised a spoiled brat representative government that needs to be taken to the woodshed. Are you satisfied with the government that owns you? There are churches who refuse to allow us to use their facilities to teach.
Unspoken or even sometimes spoken rule that religion and politics don't mix. You wouldn't dare speak out against the government or somehow resist.
Christians have to be involved in politics. God commands it.
Every turn of event through history hinged.
One person will stand up.
Upon a single person.
And then everybody else will stand.
A gym member, surrounded by a crowd of supporters, was placed in handcuffs.
A Tampa Bay pastor has been arrested.
Sentenced to a week in jail.
She also tore up a cease and desist letter.
We have a posterity waiting for us to say, we will not comply, so you will be free.